A historic moment for the Middle East. Israel and the United Arab Emirates agree to establish diplomatic ties.
This has been a huge priority for Israel, for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It's been a huge priority for the Trump administration to advance ties between Israel and the Arab world. Their peace plan was designed to do just this, and this is a very significant step.
And how markets are responding to lower unemployment claims. Plus, why airplane food is taking off. It's Thursday, August 13th. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. We reached a new milestone in the U.S. job market's recovery today. Fewer than 1 million new unemployment claims were filed last week. Though still historically high, it's the smallest number of weekly claims since the start of the pandemic, according to the Labor Department. The number of continuing claims also declined at the start of the month, not long after the federal government's $600 a week enhanced unemployment benefit expired. Our economics reporter Sarah Cheney says many economists attribute at least part of that drop to the loss of those supplemental benefits.
Basically, the idea there being that people are getting a lot less money from unemployment benefits now. That extra $600 was providing, in a lot of cases, more money than people were making in their jobs. And so now they might be discouraged from either applying for benefits, or in some cases, if you were already collecting unemployment benefits, you could say, hey, this really isn't worth it anymore. I'm only making a couple hundred dollars per week in unemployment benefits, so maybe I'll start looking for a job. We don't have perfect data on the extent to which those things are happening versus the drop in claims being mainly due to layoffs easing, but economists are saying that all those factors are probably at play.
Still, an overwhelming majority of economists surveyed by the Wall Street Journal this month said the extra cash boosted the economy more than it held back the labor market. That may be part of the reason the drop in new weekly jobless claims didn't give markets much of a boost today. Investors are concerned that consumer spending could fall when those out of work have even less money in their pockets. U.S. stocks waffled between small gains and losses. The Dow and the S&P each ended the day down a fraction of a percent, and the Nasdaq closed up a quarter of a percent. Another factor at play, the continuing standoff between lawmakers on a fresh stimulus package. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the parties remain miles apart and that Democrats would only resume talks if Republicans agree to spend significantly more than $1 trillion. At her weekly press briefing, Pelosi was asked what Democrats have to gain by waiting on negotiations.
This is not half a loaf. This is not even being in the same room. Boardroom table, kitchen table. So I appreciate the goodness that you asked that question, but perhaps you mistook them for somebody who gave a damn. That isn't the case.
Top U.S. companies are pushing back against the Trump administration's planned restrictions on business transactions with WeChat. The messaging and payments app, which is owned by Chinese internet giant Tencent, is used by more than 1.2 billion people globally and is ubiquitous in China. We report that earlier this week, multinationals, including Apple, Walmart, Ford, and Disney, joined a call with White House officials to raise concerns about the order, saying it could undermine their competitiveness in China. Epic Games, the maker of the popular survival game Fortnite, says it's seeking legal action against Apple after Fortnite was removed from the Apple App Store. That happened just hours after Epic launched its own payment system in the Fortnite app, giving its 350 million registered players the option to buy in-game purchases for up to 20% less. The game is free to play, but generates revenue through those sales, and Apple and Alphabet take about a 30% cut. And while all eyes have been on a coronavirus vaccine, health officials are hoping people won't forget to get their flu vaccination this year. Our health reporter Jared Hopkins says drug makers are making a record 200 million flu shots for the season, up 13% from last year.
One of the concerns is whether or not, because hospitals and the health system has already been pressured by COVID-19, that it might be more overwhelmed by the flu season. And so health authorities are trying to relieve some of that pressure by encouraging people to get their flu shots. The CDC, the federal government, has noted that you can get both COVID-19 and the flu at the same time. That is possible, but preventative health measures is what they are encouraging.
Coming up after the break, what diplomatic relations between Israel and the UAE could mean for peace in the Middle East. Israel and the United Arab Emirates have agreed to establish a formal diplomatic relationship. The agreement was brokered by the U.S., and President Trump made the announcement in the Oval Office today.
This deal is a significant step towards building a more peaceful, secure, and prosperous Middle East. Now that the ice has been broken, I expect more Arab and Muslim countries will follow the United Arab Emirates.
The pact represents a dramatic shift in Middle East policy, and negotiators are hoping it will cement Israel's warming ties with Gulf Arab states. Our Israel and Palestinian territories correspondent Felicia Schwartz has been covering this and joins us from Tel Aviv. Felicia, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Felicia, Israel has diplomatic relationships with other Arab countries, Egypt and Jordan. Why is this being called a historic breakthrough for peace in the Middle East?
Those relationships were reached decades ago, and since then, there has basically been a freeze on formal ties between Israel and other Arab states, so long as Israel and the Palestinians hadn't reached a final status agreement to figure out, you know, how to resolve this decades-long conflict. But this is a major shift because you have the United Arab Emirates saying to the world that this conflict between Israel and the Palestinians doesn't need to be resolved for Israel to be welcomed kind of into the region and considered a sort of serious, legitimate player. This has been a huge priority for Israel, for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It's been a huge priority for the Trump administration to advance ties between Israel and the Arab world. Their peace plan was designed to do just this, and this is a very significant step.
So it sounds like the two sides have been brought together in part because they both have tense relations with Iran. Can you talk a little bit about the role that the Iran deal played in all of this?
Sure. So both Israel and the Gulf Arab states were very wary of the nuclear deal that the Obama administration reached with Iran and other world powers. Trump pulled the U.S. out of that deal in 2018 and basically has encouraged Israel and the Arab states, which have this, you know, common opposition to Iran in the region, to be drawn closer together over that shared enmity. And this is really a reflection of that shared cause.
As part of the deal, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed not to go ahead with a pledge to annex parts of the occupied West Bank. Why was that so important for this deal and for the United Arab Emirates?
So basically, Prime Minister Netanyahu has been running for re-election in several campaigns over the past basically 2 years. And this is something that really appeals to his right-wing base. But basically, the Palestinians claim the West Bank as land for a future state. Israel would be moving to annex parts of the West Bank that Israeli settlements are located on. But basically, if Israel did this unilaterally, the Arab states and the Europeans argued that this would dash any hope for a two-state solution that would create an independent Palestinian state with an Israeli state next to it. The idea was that what the border should be would be agreed in final status agreements. This would be Israel essentially saying, we're not going to negotiate, we're going to claim what's ours and move on. And this was seen as something that could really be like the nail in the coffin for the two-state solution that the world has pressed Israel and the Palestinians to agree on.
Peace in the Middle East was something the Trump administration was really pushing as one of their main foreign policy initiatives, at least at the beginning of the administration. What role did they play in brokering this deal?
They played a huge role. It's been a major policy priority of the Trump administration to get Israel and the Arab states have normalized ties. The U.S. really pressed Israel to agree not to go ahead and annex parts of the West Bank to make this happen. basically American officials have been shuttling in and out of Israel to talk to the Netanyahu administration about what they were going to do on this. There have been a lot of talks back and forth. And, you know, clearly this is the product of the U.S. getting Israel to hold off and, you know, helping to offer them some carrots in return for that.
The big goal, obviously, though, is peace between Israel and the Palestinians. How close does this deal get us to that point?
It doesn't change anything on the ground here. Israel occupies the West Bank. Palestinians have refused to talk to the Israelis so long as the Trump plan, which is very favorable to Israel, is the basis for any discussions. And this doesn't change any of that. I think Palestinian officials have reacted pretty negatively to this development, and I don't know that this will bring them any closer to talking to each other. You know, I think American officials would argue that the Palestinians need to understand that they need to kind of accept what they can get and move on and move forward. And perhaps, you know, seeing the UAE normalize ties with Israel without Israel making any concessions to the Palestinians, perhaps that's a sign to the Palestinians, American officials would say, that they, you know, need to move on.
Felicia Schwartz, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And finally, as a mode of travel, flying has its ups and its downs. Those who've canceled trips because of the pandemic probably don't miss the cramped legroom in coach much. But it seems that airplane food has a small but devoted following. In fact, some grounded frequent flyers are missing that steamy stuffed manicotti and chicken parm in plastic wrap so much that they're ordering it at home. And airline caterers have been complying, sending in-flight meals to stir-crazy customers. Our reporter Mike Cherney has been talking to them about what's on the menu.
So it's a combination of many things. There's some beef curries. There's a lot of egg dishes like omelets and quiches, chicken parms, Mongolian beef. Yeah, there's like a whole range of stuff. So basically, you know, when you're on an airplane, you see the menu. It's a whole bunch of like random stuff on the menu often. It's kind of the same thing, sort of a grab bag of stuff. Some of the airlines or the caterers I spoke to said that they are adjusting the food a bit for on-ground consumption. So you may not be getting exactly the same thing. But yeah, people sort of say, you know, it tastes pretty good. It's a bit salty. It's a bit seasoned. But overall, most of the people are pretty happy with it.
One company said it's selling 300 to 500 airplane meals a day, but that's not exactly making up for lost business. Before the pandemic, their daily in-flight meal sales were around 140,000. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.